Sample Test 6 Part A.
Business people spend a lot of time in meetings, and meetings come in all shapes and sizes, ranging from formal committee meetings to informal one-to-one meetings. There are several reasons why meetings are held. Reaching decisions in a meeting means that all the participants can feel more committed to the decision. More information is available, and different ideas can be contributed. Meetings can lead to more imaginative and informed decisions, often more courageous decisions than one person might feel brave enough to make. But meetings also have drawbacks. More time is required, there's more talk, sometimes irrelevant and repetitive, and more group pressure. The more people there are at a meeting, the longer it may take to reach a decision. There seem to be ideal sizes for meetings, depending on the purpose. A meeting where information is being given to people can be quite large, as questions from the floor may be asked by a few individuals on everyone else's behalf. The way a committee meeting operates often depends on the style of its leader or chairperson. He or she may control the proceedings or let everyone speak whenever they want. An effective chairperson should be flexible. In some meetings, the members have to take a vote before a decision can be made. Formal proposals or motions may have to be tabled, seconded, and discussed before a vote can be taken. Other meetings may require a consensus of members. Everyone has to agree. Most meetings have an agenda. For a formal meeting, this document may be circulated in advance to all participants. For an informal meeting, the agenda may simply be a list of points that have to be dealt with. The purpose of an agenda is to speed up the meeting and keep everyone to the point. The agenda for a formal meeting must be organized in logical order. Often, the agenda shows not only the topics, but also the meeting's function regarding each topic. All items on which a decision is to be taken should appear on the agenda. One-to-one or small informal meetings also tend to be structured and planned. They are different from chance conversations in a corridor or over coffee. Small informal meetings may also take place or continue during a meal.
Part B, Passage 1. Mary, you know, I've been thinking about applying for a job in Germany. Well, I've got the details about different jobs, and I'd like your opinion about which would be the best one to go for.
Where are the jobs?
One's in Munich, one's in Frankfurt, and the other one's in Hamburg.
Munich's supposed to be a very nice place.
Yes, it is, and it's also in a beautiful part of Germany, not far from the Alps.
That would be great for the kids. They'd love to be able to go skiing on weekends.
But one problem with Munich is that it's growing very fast. That means the cost of living will probably be very high.
How does the salary of a job in Munich compare with the other jobs?
It's a higher salary than the job in Frankfurt, but lower than the one in Hamburg. The Hamburg job has the most responsibility. From the point of view of career progression, that would probably be the best job for me.
Hamburg is the closest to Britain, too, so it would be easy to come back for long weekends and holidays.
That's right. And there's a regular ferry service which would save quite a bit on fares.
What about the cost of living in Germany as a whole? How does it compare with Britain?
Well, it's definitely higher than over here, but salaries are substantially higher, so we'd certainly be better off than we are now.
And what about accommodation?
Well, actually, flats are much cheaper to rent in towns like Munich, Frankfurt, and Hamburg than they are here in London, so we'd be able to afford to live in a nice, spacious flat, I'd think.
That'd be nice. And do you know what the cultural facilities are like in these cities?
In fact, they're quite good in all three. But of course, Munich has an international reputation as a cultural center.
Another thing we'll have to consider, of course, are the educational possibilities. How long would you want to go to Germany for?
I think a maximum of 5 years. I think working overseas will be good for my career, and, of course, it'd be a good experience for you and the kids, too.
So we'd be there long enough to enable John to complete a university course?
Well, yes, we would. Unless, of course, he preferred to go to a university in the UK. But yes, if he did want to go to a university in Germany, there'd be no problem, as each of those cities have their own universities. Munich, in fact, has the second largest university in Germany.
Well, it seems to me the choice must be between Hamburg and Munich. Hamburg has the advantage of being the closest to Britain, so coming home would be relatively easy and inexpensive. Munich, on the other hand, sounds like the most interesting place from a cultural point of view.
I agree with you. Personally, I favor Munich, because it's so near to the Alps. We all like skiing, and we could go skiing at weekends in the winter.
I think you're right. I had thought Hamburg might be preferable because it's the closest to Britain, but we'll only be abroad for 5 years, and if we're going to be away, let's choose the most attractive place we can.
Right. That's agreed. Now all I have to do is get the job.
1. What is the main topic between the man and the woman?
2. Which of the following cities is not mentioned in the conversation?
3. How does the salary of the Munich job compare with those of the other two jobs?
4. How long does the man intend to stay in Germany?
5. Which of the following statements is true, according to the conversation?
Passage 2. 8 o'clock. Here is the news read by Andrew Viney. Good evening. First, the international news headlines. Fighting had continued all day in Timor, and there have been heavy casualties. In the United States, the president has said the Star Wars project will not go ahead if there is a new arms agreement with Russia. In Brussels, the European Union countries have agreed after 10 months of discussion on a new agricultural policy. And now for the national news. The rail strike continues. Negotiations between the Rail Workers Union and the railway management broke down today once again, with the management offering an 8% pay rise and the union still insisting on the full 12% they initially demanded. Negotiations will, however, resume tomorrow. The latest inflation and unemployment figures were issued today. The current inflation rate is 7.5%. That's 1% up on last month. This rate is still lower than most member states of the European Union, but higher than the United States. Unemployment figures have also risen, 14% compared with 13% last month. This rise is due particularly to the high numbers of school leavers coming on to the job market at present. The Prime Minister today visited Felixstowe, where he opened a new car factory. After wishing the factory every success, he said the factory's new production patterns, which are based on robots, should provide a model to all new industry. The long and unusual spell of hot weather is beginning to cause water supply problems. In parts of Yorkshire and Lancashire, water was cut for 6 hours today. Local water authorities, bombarded by protests and complaints, have said that they have taken emergency measures, which will ensure supply to hospitals and fire stations, and public pumps have been set up in all towns in the affected areas. And so, to tomorrow's weather. Not too good, I'm afraid. It will be cloudy and humid in all parts of the country, except the southwest, where there'll be sunny periods. And that's the end of the news.
6. What has the U.S. President said about the Star Wars project?
7. According to the news, which of the following countries has the lowest inflation rate?
8. What percent pay rise does the Rail Workers Union demand?
9. What did the Prime Minister do when he visited Felixstowe?
10. What is beginning to cause the water supply problems in parts of the country?
Passage 3. How did you become a hypnotist?
Well, I'd been teaching exercises for a long time. In fact, when I was at college, I was going to be an infant teacher, and I wanted, you know, eventually to be a child psychologist, but once I started, I didn't find it actually terribly enjoyable. So I just left, and I went into the exercise profession almost by mistake. And I'd been doing that for about 4 years, and it was very nice. But mentally, it wasn't stimulating enough, and I wanted to do something else.
Do you mean by the exercise profession, aerobics and weight training?
Yeah, I was teaching all kinds of things, yoga, aerobics. But I'd gone to America by then, but I wanted to do something else because mentally, it just wasn't stimulating enough. And I was very aware, especially in America, that, like, 1 in every 8 girls has a really serious eating problem, like bulimia, anorexia, which does kill a lot of people. And it does make people actually go mentally deficient, too, in the end, because it's so damaging. And I was very aware of how serious a problem it was, but I wasn't going to do anything about it, and in fact, I had a minor eating problem, but finally I went to see a hypnotist, just almost by mistake, actually, and I wasn't particularly impressed with what he did, but I was surprised to find that it was working, and so I was practicing it on myself, and I went back to see him about 2 weeks later, and I said, you know, I've been doing this myself, and he said, well, show me what you've been doing. So I did, and he said that, you know, I was very good at it, and I should utilize it, and I really didn't need to come back to him. And also, I'd always been late. I'd been late all my life. I just could not stop being late. And so I worked on that, and that stopped. It just stopped overnight. It was almost uncanny. So then I was so interested that I went off on a self-hypnosis course, really just to learn how to do it all myself. And while I was on this course, I just thought, you know, I'm going to do this as a career because I suddenly realized that I could work with all these people in my classes that were anorexic, bulimic, or had very, very low self-images, and I could still teach.
11. How did the woman being interviewed become a hypnotist?
12. What did the woman want to become eventually when she was at college?
13. Why did the woman give up the exercise profession?
14. Why did the woman go to see the hypnotist at first?
15. According to the woman, which type of people attended the self-hypnosis course? Passage 4. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for attending this investment analysts' meeting. As you may have heard, we are planning a big expansion of our company. To give all the analysts present the background to our present strong position, I would like to outline the company's performance over the past years. If you will look at this graph of our gross turnover, you will see that at the end of our first year, that is 1992, we had a gross turnover of $3 million. This figure was better than our expectations and shows that our home security system did find a gap in the market. This was confirmed by the doubling of our gross turnover in 1993. We also think this rapid rise in sales was helped by our extensive advertising campaign. As the graph indicates, 1993 showed a slight decline in gross turnover of $5 million. This was due to the fact that by this time, competitors, seeing our success, had produced rivals to our model. This led to some loss of sales. To meet this increased competition in 1994, we introduced an incentive scheme for our dealers, plus very favorable credit terms for our customers. As a result, we stopped any further reduction in sales, and, in fact, we managed to increase our turnover to $5,600,000. The year 1995 saw the introduction of our updated product with a number of new features. This led to a steady rise in sales throughout the year. The gross turnover figure at the end of 1995 is slightly different from that of the previous years, for it included two figures. One, the total of sales of the new model. This amounted to $5.5 million. The second part of the total for 1995 represents purchase of the new features alone, for we had designed these so they could be added to the old model of our security system. This figure is about $1,100,000. Together, therefore, these two sums represent a total turnover of $6,600,000. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the situation as it stands today. However, I can add that the sales figures for the first part of this year are very encouraging, and we have high hopes for the second part of this year.
16. Whom is the man addressing?
17. What is the main topic of the speech?
18. What products or service does the company sell?
19. What caused the slight decline in gross turnover for the year 1993?
20. What is the gross turnover for the year 1995?
Part C.
Today I'd like to talk about love between child and parent. For most children before the age from 8.5 to 10, the problem is almost exclusively that of being loved, of being loved for what one is. The child up to this age does not yet love. He responds gratefully and joyfully to being loved. At this point of the child's development, a new factor enters the picture, that of producing love by one's own activity. For the first time, the child thinks of giving something to mother or to father. For the first time in the child's life, the idea of love is changed from being loved into loving, into creating love. It takes many years from this first beginning to the maturing of love. Eventually, the child may now be an adolescent and has overcome his egocentricity. The other person is not anymore primarily a means to the satisfaction of his own needs. The needs of the other person are as important as his own. In fact, they have become more important. To give has become more satisfactory and more joyous than to receive. To love has become more important even than being loved. Closely related to development of the capacity of love is the development of the object of love. The first months and years of the child are those where his closest attachment is to his mother. This attachment begins before the moment of birth, when mother and child are still one, although they are two. Although the child is now living outside of the womb, he is still completely dependent on mother. But he becomes more independent day by day. He learns to walk, to talk, and to explore the world on his own. The relationship to mother loses some of its vital significance, and instead, the relationship to father becomes more and more important. In order to understand this shift from mother to father, we must consider the essential differences in quality between motherly and fatherly love. We have already spoken about motherly love. Motherly love, by its very nature, is unconditional. Mother loves the newborn infant because it is her child, not because the child has fulfilled any specific condition or lived up to any specific expectation. The relationship to father is quite different. Mother is the home we come from. She is nature, soil, the ocean. Father does not represent any such natural home. He has little connection with the child in the first years of its life, and his importance for the child in this period cannot be compared with that of the mother. But while father does not represent the natural world, he represents the other pole of human existence. He represents a world of thought, of law and order, of discipline, and of travel and adventure. Father is the one who teaches the child, who shows him the road into the world. Closely related to this function is one which is connected with socioeconomic development. When private property came into existence, and when private property could be inherited by one of the sons, father began to look for that son to whom he could leave his property. Naturally, that was the one whom father thought best fitted to become his successor, the son who was most like him, and consequently whom he likes the most. Fatherly love is conditional love. Its principle is, I love you because you fulfill my expectations, because you do your duty, because you are like me. In conditional fatherly love, we find a negative and a positive aspect. The negative aspect is the very fact that fatherly love has to be deserved, that it can be lost if one does not do what is expected. In the nature of fatherly love lies the fact that obedience becomes the main virtue, that disobedience is the main sin, and its punishment is the withdrawal of fatherly love.
Part D. 1. Sentence Translation. 1. A further drop in sales was sustained over the following months, but after that, the situation picked up, and the sales increased quite sharply.
2. We are the British subsidiary of an Italian company, and we're thinking of developing some new lines for Britain, drinks for the British market.
3. There are so many different approaches to art teaching, but I think that the main thing is to encourage the imagination of each child and allow them to express themselves as freely as possible.
4. The government is under intense pressure from the main opposition parties to take urgent action following the third serious road accident in less than a month on the outskirts of the capital.
5. I don't really know what qualifications are needed for the job, but I think obviously a degree in modern languages or political science or economics would be very useful. 2. Passage Translation.
1. Compared to Japan and the European countries, the United States is well ahead when it comes to the number of cars per 100 inhabitants. The figure there is 60 for every 100 inhabitants, whereas in Japan it is only 29. The United Kingdom, despite its position as an industrial manufacturing country, also has a rather low figure of 41 cars for every 100 inhabitants.
2. Although both Switzerland and the United Kingdom show strong similarities in the numbers of respondents who wish to try the Flexitime program in the next 5 years or enlarge the program, in the UK, the 45.6% figure for those who have tried Flexitime is considerably lower than Switzerland's 68.5%, and indeed lower than all the other countries in the chart. Likewise, when looking at percentages of respondents who had not tried or had no plans to try Flexitime, one finds a similar correlation. Most significant of all, perhaps, is the enormous 14% of all UK companies who have dropped the program or will drop it. This is the end of the tape.